Good morning and welcome to this episode of Step Into the Light. I am your host, Patty Sheen. Thank you for listening. On this show, we introduce listeners to people who have found their way out of the dark shadows of life and back to light, and those who, through various ministries and creative endeavors, lead others on their journey from darkness to light. Good morning again and welcome. My guest today, Victoria Dorshorn, is an ordained pastor who speaks and teaches at local churches and writes Bible studies. She writes a blog and maintains a website, victorythroughlight.com. Her hope is to share the truth that no matter what foe or trial we face, we can be transformed from victim to victor through faith in Jesus Christ. Victoria has published two Christian nonfiction books, Victory Through Light, How to Overcome the Growing Cultural Darkness, and Victory Through Voice, How to Speak Truth When the Culture Demands Silence. She is releasing the third book in the Victory series later this year. Good morning, Vicki. Welcome to Step Into the Light.
Good morning. I'm really glad to be here with you. Thank you.
Vicki, I've been looking forward to doing an interview with you for quite some time. I read your books a while ago, and they really grabbed me, and you have such an important message to share with folks today. So thank you so much for being here. I'd like to start out by asking you, what led you to pursue ministry? Did you grow up in a Christian home, or did you embrace Christianity later on in life? Tell us where it all began for you.
That's a tough question. From my earliest childhood, I can remember that I wanted to be a writer. I wrote rhymes and poems and little stories and stuff when I was, you know, when I first learned how to write, I think, as soon as I was able. And the ministry, though, that calling came later. I went through a period of rebellion and commitment, you know, then I committed to the Lord. He blessed me by placing me in a church that believed in Bible study for everybody, you know, not just the pastor, but everybody should know the Word of God. And I completed correspondence courses that enabled me to teach adult Sunday school classes. I also taught home Bible studies for several years. Eventually, I was called on to preach at a minister's meeting without prior notice. I just happened to be there, and the pastor in charge said, "Oh, I heard that you can speak." And I went like, "Roof," like a dog barking, and kind of laughed. And I said, "Well, I do sometimes." And he said, "Well, would you bring the word right after lunch?" Which is, of course, the worst time to ever speak. But I said, "Okay." I finished my lunch, and fortunately that morning I had studied something, so I got it all ready, and in like 15 minutes, and I spoke. I must have impressed him, because several years later, when a lady that I was ministering with in a small church in Aurora, when she asked that I be ordained, he said, "Oh yes, he would gladly do that." So that's when I was ordained. But I've never had the full pastorship of a meeting on my own, speak at other meetings. And I think about the verse in Luke 12 where Jesus says, "For unto whosoever much is given, of him much shall be required." And I think because I received so much of the word, then I need to give it out. But with COVID, I kind of lost a lot of my opportunities, because the churches stopped having all the different services. So I turned to writing then, and I feel that is a good way that I can share the word, and that it may be the ministry that God has called me to rather than a speaking ministry.
Yes, most definitely. So you have never been like pastor of first whatever church of New Orleans or whatever?
No.
Okay. I just wondered because I didn't know. But it sounds like you have an interesting past, Vicki. And as with so many of my guests, I love the way that God leads us down the path that he wants us to go in very subtle ways.
Yes. And it's like everybody's path is a little different. And yet when God's in control, it just works together perfectly.
Exactly. Yes. Well, thank you so much for sharing that with us.
You said that you started writing the Victory series pretty much during the pandemic, and it sounds like your heart is very much burdened, Vicki, with what we are dealing with in today's society. So give us a little bit about what did motivate you to write that Victory series.
Okay. I started the Victory Through Light, and it originally had a different title, and I played with different versions of it for several years before it finally took shape into what it became. But the recognition of my own personal failure at times to hold forth the word of life or to, you know, shine as light in the world, that realization that I had failed to do that at times really spoke to me as I began to see what was happening in our culture. And added to that were some of the experiences I had as an instructor at the college level when I was scolded for even mentioning God in the classroom and things mm-hmm. like that. I began to really awaken to the prevailing worldview of disbelief in God and rejection of his word. And I think that a person has to really be asleep not to see the many ways the culture has set itself against biblical principles. Then I started having, as I substituted at the junior high and high school level, I began to see, you know, what's being taught in schools and different things. And I just was just so burdened that, you know, that was going on and that I wasn't really engaging in that. So many times that's what we do. We go to church and we have our own little circle of friends, Christian friends, do much in the culture. And I just, well, not to be political, but when a major party removes God from its platform, you know that our nation's in danger.
Yes.
And so when I woke up to that danger, it was like, I have to do something. I have to write something. I have to try to encourage people, Christians, to hold forth that light and to wake up and to be the light that we are called to be. That's where that came about. I had a person that read it at one of Marlene's conferences. He had read like 3 chapters of it. And his encouragement to me was, the only thing you need to do is finish this and get it out there.
mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's
so
true.
I took that as, you know, a word from the Lord, and I got really busy and I finished it. I see where everybody in the world, even the people that don't believe in Jesus, will quote, "For God so loved the world, you know, that he gave his only begotten Son, that whosoever believeth in him should not perish but have everlasting life." And many times yes. they don't even think about it being real faith, you know. They just, "For God so loved the world, see, he loves the world and he's not going to send anybody to hell." But they don't ever go on and read the rest of that portion.
Mm-hmm,
and
exactly.
That's, yeah, because Jesus went on and said that this is the condemnation, that light is come into the world, meaning himself, and man or humanity loved darkness rather than light because their deeds were evil. Everyone that does evil hates the light, neither comes to the light lest his deeds should be reproved. But he that does truth comes to the light that his deeds may be made manifest, that they are wrought in God. So then we see that light is whatever is of Jesus. You know, his truth and his word, and darkness is what rejects Jesus. And so when we see the darkness in our culture, we have to realize if we're Christians, we need to be that light to overcome that darkness.
Yes, and we need to realize that even if you're in a room that is totally dark, okay, there's absolutely no light coming in through it, and a match is lit, or even a curtain is slightly pulled away to where a street light kind of makes its way in, that light is going to make a huge impact on that darkness, even though it's not that much. You know what I'm saying?
Exactly, exactly. It doesn't take much light at all to chase away some of the darkness.
Yes. And I wanted to go back to, Vicki, to what you mentioned about our church and our little group of people that we kind of hang out with. And I think part of that comes from the fact that we're in a comfort zone there. And if we try to reach out beyond that comfort zone, we're so intimidated and we're so frightened of, oh, gee, you know, what if this person thinks I'm really weird or whatever, you know, you just kind of shy away with that sense of, oh, geez, I don't want to make a fool of myself. I probably don't know enough to combat any disagreement that's going to come up here, so I better just keep my mouth shut. I know that's the way I tend to be anyway.
Right, and I think I'm that way too. And so as I, you know, as I took this correction from the Lord, thinking about the light and thinking about I need to shine like light, I need to be light, I took that to myself in my own life and experience and then wrote about it to benefit others. But it is so easy to just not speak up and stay hidden so that we're not making waves, we're not rocking the boat, you know, we're not causing anybody to be shocked or alarmed or, you know, we're not offending
anyone.
Offended. You know, God forbid that we would offend somebody.
Yeah.
Well, I wanted to mention to listeners, Vicki, that in your Victory Through Light, you start out with an allegory of this person that is in this darkness and trying to find their way out of this pit. And, oh my goodness, you did such a fantastic job with that. I kept referring back to that. You kept referring back to that throughout the book. And you have the whole book just packed with all kinds of scripture. So, I mean, there's no doubt of where you're getting your truth from. It's coming right out of the good book.
Yes. Yeah. And, you know, speaking of that allegory, I did take the allegory out of there and kind of, enhanced it a little bit and then published it as a little tiny booklet called Into Light. And it's just the allegory so that a person could just read it as the allegory and see the whole story unfold. And then at the very end, see a scripture or two, and then there's a prayer there for people who might be wanting to give their heart to the Lord after having read that. So it's kind of a little evangelistic tool that I designed that kind of goes along with the book, but it doesn't go into the real meat and depth of the study that is in Victory Through Light.
Nice. That's a great idea, Vicki.
We'll take a break here where I remind listeners that you are listening to Step Into the Light with host Patty Sheen here on Blog Talk Radio. My guest is author and speaker Victoria Dorshorn, author of Victory Through Light and Victory Through Voice. If you would like to listen to this episode again or hopefully refer it to friends and family, it is on archive. The most current 5 episodes can be found on the homepage at pattysheen.com. That's spelled PATTISHENE.com. The Blog Talk Radio tab at the top of the page will give you access to all of the episodes we have aired to date. Under each episode is a More Information tab that provides links to guest website, social media, and other resource information. Let's return to our interview.
Well, we talk about cultural darkness, and I don't know if there's a particular definition for it. It may mean something different to everybody, but do you have a particular, when you say cultural darkness, do you have a particular thought in mind?
Well, yes, and that was tricky too. Cultural darkness. Here's my take on it, what I came down to, and then I have to kind of, you know, go into some examples. But cultural darkness is the darkness that engulfs a culture that has rejected the light of Jesus Christ.
Excellent definition.
You know, yeah, I'm thinking that's about as good as I could get it. And like you mentioned before, you know, the darkness. Well, darkness is the absence of light. So if you don't mm-hmm. turn on the darkness, but to get it, you simply turn off the light.
Yes.
So when a culture rejects the truth of the gospel and sets out to violate the principles of a holy God, that culture has chosen darkness. And, you know, unless we are light in that room is going to stay dark.
Mm-hmm.
Like you mentioned, if a room is dark and then you have to introduce light to that room to get rid of the darkness. We have, even though, you know, I say, well, our culture is dark, we have a lot of Christians in this nation. And there is light in our culture in places. I know we go to churches that have light, but we're kind of allowing that to be dimmed in the public sphere. And when you think about it, the church in general has accepted so much of the culture's worldview that our light can sometimes not be seen. You know, you look at what churches are allowing and even, you know, in favor of now. Many churches validate and celebrate sexual behavior that God abhors. The word says yes. He abhors it. Mm-hmm. And yet, and I'm not talking just about homosexuality. In this book, I give some 2014 statistics, and I know they're kind of old now, but back then, even 61% of single Christians were okay with casual sex, and only 11% of Christians, single Christians, believe that sex should be safe for marriage. That right there shows that there's a compromise in the church.
Most definitely. I know.
Yeah, even in churches where biblical obedience is stressed, our young people often enter into premarital cohabitation. Mm-hmm. You know, sometimes they have babies before they even consider marriage. And, you know, and it's sad. I remember as a kid, and you probably remember this too, we used to have a little jingle that we would tease each other with. Let's see, how did it go? Two little lovebirds sitting in a tree, K-I-S-S-I-N-G. First comes love, then comes marriage. Then comes Vicky pushing a baby carriage.
Yep.
Whatever the name was. You remember that one?
Yes, I do. I remember it well, Vicky.
Yeah, and now we got the baby carriage comes first, and then maybe there might be love after that if they stay together long enough. And then maybe they'll consider marriage, but not to always.
Right.
You know, and it's like that's the cultural darkness. That's the effect of the cultural darkness. Alan Jackson is a minister in Tennessee somewhere, and I love the way he says it. I don't think I got it in exactly his words, but he says that our culture is in this state not because of the sinfulness of unbelievers, but because of the complacency and inaction of the church.
Oh, I agree with that 100%. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. We have failed to be the light, and we have given place to darkness, and so... You know, we need to be awakened from that and start shining.
Yes, we do. Yes, we do. And it's a challenge and it's scary and not everybody will rise to that challenge. And that's what's holding us back, I think.
Then there's people like you that are, you know, willing to get out there and say, look, this is really the way it is. And I want to champion you for that. And thank you for that, Vicky, because you have shared such a powerful message in your books, and you're sharing it today on the show. So thank you so much.
Yes, you're welcome. Thank you.
Well, along the same vein, moral relativism is a common belief today. Tell us what that is and how it is detrimental to society.
Okay. And again, that's another tough one.
Yeah, I just threw some tough questions at you today, but I knew you could handle
it. You sure did. Well, yeah, I really had to work at this. So in the book, I say the removal of all moral law is anarchy, and the substitution of immoral for moral is rebellion.
Mm-hmm.
And it's kind of like moral relativism hits those both in a sense. Moral relativism says that we can't really say that something is moral or immoral because it depends on the situation and the viewpoint of the people involved. It's like saying one person's good or one person's truth or right can be something that another person thinks is bad or false. It claims that nothing has an absolute value and that everyone's truth is true. The problem with that thinking, which is really a lack of thinking because it's not very logical, you know, is that every statement itself must also be relative, not absolute. If, you know, if you're saying there are no absolutes and everything's relative, then if everything is relative, the statement that everything is relative is also relative.
Yes.
So, you know, you're going around in a circle. And if the statement that it's relative is relative, that means there's a condition where maybe it is absolute, not relative, whatever it is. So if everyone's truth is true, and I have a truth that says not everyone's truth is true, then if all truths are true, my truth is also true. So then you have something being true and not true at the same time.
Yes.
Which leads to mental chaos. So
mm-hmm.
that's a problem that arises from it, is that we end up in this insane condition where we're not able to really think logically or rationally about things. When we get there, then we end up like described by the prophet Isaiah, woe to them that call evil good and good evil, that call darkness light and light darkness, and that put bitter for sweet and sweet for bitter. That's what's happened. Now we know things that we know are good, according to the word of God, are called evil or wrong now, and things that are wrong are called good.
Yes.
That's going on, you know, isn't that? And in that same chapter, he says, woe to them that draw iniquity with cords of vanity and sin is with a cart rope. So it's like our culture is just pulling this load of sins along behind it everywhere it goes. And these people justify the wicked for reward and take away the righteousness of the righteous from him. You see that when they criticize people who, you know, who are godly and who are Christian and who take stands. Look at the pro-life movement, the people that
yes.
are having the care centers that actually care for the women and help them keep their baby and, you know, go through this. They're denigrated and called names, vandalized
yeah.
as if
mm-hmm.
they were evil, but they're good, you know. And so
right.
that kind of inversion leads to the destruction of a culture, just like Rome, you know.
I know, and I think about Rome a lot, and I think that's right where we're going, which is pretty scary.
It is pretty scary, but that looks like where we're headed, because
yeah.
they call biblical morality hateful, unkind, and mean.
Mm-hmm.
And they say that all these different kinds of sins and lawlessness are loving, kind, and affirming.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, wait a minute here. But it does creep in gradually. And I think that's the thing that I wanted to bring out in the book. Moral relativism creeps in sheep's clothing, in a sense. And it's all around us in our entertainment, you know, in movies and television shows.
Oh,
you have,
sure.
you know, the stories of people, you know, they got a terrible marriage and their spouse is being very mean and horrible to them or whatever. And they meet somebody that just really treats them wonderfully. And, you know, isn't that a wonderful relationship then? And it's like all this relativity making these things look pleasing. And one movie based on a book by John Grisham, A Time to Kill. I don't know if you ever saw that movie.
You know,
but
I can't remember. I know I read the book.
Yeah. I loved the movie, and I felt like it was right on. I was really drawn into it, and then I realized what really that whole thing had done. But it's where a black man in the Deep South kills two white teens who raped and brutalized his preteen daughter. And what their crime against his daughter, I found myself saying they needed to be killed, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
they needed judgment. And you knew that that court in the Deep South would not have found them guilty. They would have gotten off.
Right.
And this man knew that too. And he managed to shoot them both. And then the movie is about his trial. And there is a white lawyer that defends him. And he has a lot of problems because the Klan goes after his family too. We sympathize with that father, and we want him to get off because we understand that evil that he was judging. But at the same time, that's a far out there, but that's an extreme example of relative morality because, you know, we cheer for him. We feel like his killing of those two kids was justified because of what they did to his daughter. And yet the word says, vengeance is mine, I will repay, says the Lord.
Yes, yes.
Right, so we're looking at something that appears to be like it should be okay, and yet when you really get down there and judge it in terms of the word, you have to say it really wasn't right that he did that. But we've accepted that, you know. And so a lot of what's happening now is a result of just putting our arms around that sort of, I call it sometimes situational ethics or
mm-hmm.
relative morality, and embracing it and saying, yes, in this case, in this situation, yes, you know, and we allow things and then we begin to allow more and more. And then that influence takes over.
And you know, Victoria, speaking of the modern shows, granted, yes, there's some of them that I watch. I enjoy the stories. I enjoy the characters. But when it comes right down to it, my very favorite show on TV still to this day is Gunsmoke. You know, that old Western that just has that. I mean, granted, you know, there was the Matt and Kitty thing. And, of course, she ran supposedly the saloon and probably more than that and all that. But when it comes down to justice, you know, justice was almost always served in that story. I mean, there were times when it was like, yeah, you really wish this guy would get off, but you know that they have done wrong. So I'm still a huge, you know, Gunsmoke fan. I watch it just about every day. I watch at least one episode of it, you know, when I have time. And I just still enjoy those kind of stories and Westerns and things. And I'm getting to where I watch the modern day shows less and less simply because I just don't have time. It's like I'd much rather be reading than watching some dumb show on TV. But I know exactly what you're talking about, though, Vicki, because these shows, they engage you with the characters, okay? Pretty soon you're engaged with those characters and their situations, and before you know it, just like you said, it's like, oh, well, yeah, I can understand how so-and-so would make this decision because they're in this horrible situation and this person is offering them so much, something so much better, but it's a false so much better.
Right,
but
exactly.
By that point, we don't see that. By that point, we don't see that because we're so engaged. And, yeah, so I know exactly what you're saying there, and you put that very well.
Well, let me pose another question to you here that's a toughie, and I really don't expect an answer, okay? I just thought it was something that we could talk about. In the book, you pose the question, how do we respond to those who ask, why would a good God make an evil devil?
Yeah, that was kind of a trick question. I think I threw it in there just to challenge people to think. And yet, if you look at it, Satan was created beautiful. You know, his name was Lucifer, which means light or light bearer.
Yes.
And according to Ezekiel 28, he was created perfectly until it's found in him. And that was the sin of pride and rebellion. He wanted to be greater than God, and he wanted to be his own God. And we know that God knew before he made him that he would respond this way. And I think that's the part that I challenge people to think about, because it was necessary for God to work out the plan he had for mankind, to show his love and grace in the story of redemption. So God allowed Satan to go bad to set up that conflict of the ages, that battle between good and evil and light and darkness.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, so, and we know light ultimately wins, even if our own culture goes down into darkness and judgment,
right?
You know, and falls like Rome did. We know that in the very end, light is going to win.
Yes.
But so I think what I wanted to challenge people to do was to realize that God's sovereignty covers all. And that he didn't force the devil to be evil. He created him good and let him choose evil, just like he created mankind good. You know, he said it is very good, right? But he allowed us to choose sin, and then he worked redemption's plan for us.
And that's what I think we have a hard time dealing with, is the free will thing, especially when there's an evil act that occurs. But then you look on the flip side of, well, what if I didn't have free will to do what I want to do, you know?
Right.
It's so much easier to condemn somebody else and say, well, why did they pick this evil thing? But then when we turn around and look at ourselves, and it's like, I mean, we may not have chosen that such an evil thing as to commit murder or something, but heaven knows we all do something evil probably every day to a degree, and we don't
to
mind
a degree.
Having that free will when it's our choice.
Exactly.
You know, and I mean, life would be kind of boring, actually, and I'm sure God feels that way, too. He's like, well, I don't want these humans to love me just because they have to. I want them to make
right.
that choice.
So exactly. Yeah, I don't think he was interested in having a bunch of robots.
No, you know, that's the point. Yeah,
he wanted, like you said, he wanted people who would choose him and choose to walk with him, choose to obey him. And I don't think there's anybody that 100% perfectly all day long does that. Jesus was the only one capable of that. And that's what grace is all about.
Grace and mercy. And yeah, for sure.
Along the lines of what we've been talking about today with moral relativism and cultural darkness and all of these things,
I think sometimes we tend to look at our own country as like, okay, you know, we're the, like, we think we're the most important people in the whole world, and really we're not.
Right.
We're just a little tiny sliver.
Right. And we look at that, and I think that the church in our country has gotten, you know, we're pretty spoiled because we've always had it pretty easy here lately. And we don't, you know, we don't think about being persecuted or even like killed for our faith. And yet many of our brothers and sisters throughout the world are facing that, you know, they're facing deep persecution and death for the faith. So,
yes, and
of course,
Marlene, at her conferences, I think you've been to at least a couple. I've been to several for like over 20 years now. The persecuted church is, you know, very heavy on her heart. And some of the speakers that she has had have just been amazing in the way that they share with us about. And there are people here in this country that have no idea of what these other people go through. Yeah.
Right, exactly. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Vicki, this has been really enjoyable, and you've shared so much. Thank you so much for spending time with us today, and may God continue to bless you with your writing, and may that message get out to the millions of people, literally, that need to hear it.
Well, thank you. Thank you so much, and I appreciate you having me on your podcast. I appreciate that so much, and I look forward to, you know, to coming on again.
Vicki and I have talked about her returning to the show within the next few weeks to talk about the second book in her series titled Victory Through Voice.
Listeners, in closing, we all encounter dark periods in our lives to one degree or another. During those difficult times, strive to seek the light, knowing that when we allow it to shine through, it is so much brighter than we remembered. Thank you so much for listening today. If you would like to listen to this show again, it is on archive. Go to my website, which is pattysheene.com. That's spelled PATTISHEENE.com. The most current 5 episodes are found right on the home page. You'll find the Blog Talk Radio tab at the top of the page. Click on that. It will give you a link to all the shows we have aired to date. Under each show is a more information tab. Click on that and you will find more information about our guests, such as website and social media contacts. I can also be found on Facebook, LinkedIn, Twitter, and Pinterest as Patty Sheene. Until next time, God bless you.